Because I need one also, just for reference. The course is, thank you for coming. Hope you come again. This is a five-day course about Shraddha to Prem. The main reference book that I'm going to use is the Madhurya Kandambini. How many of the devotees here have read the Madhurya Kandambini? This is a book by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, and it deals with the different stages from Shraddha to Prem. Specifically, the first chapter deals with the subject matter of bhakti. So bhakti is, what's that? Everyone can hear, I guess. Everyone can hear? Madhurya means sweetness, and Kandambini means a cloud, a formation of a group of clouds. And one of the reasons why it's named like that is that in the opening verses, he compares Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to a group of clouds which rains upon the heart of the conditioned soul who's in the desert-like material existence being afflicted by the heat of lust. But the ninefold processes within his heart that he's executing of bhakti, this rain cloud of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, waters the ninefold process, and from that sprouts the seeds of bhakti, which extinguishes extinguishes the blazing fire of lust. So as we'll learn in the next chapter, that bhakti has two leaves that unfold at the very beginning of sadhana bhakti, namely, kleshagni and shubhada. Shubhada means it brings about all auspiciousness, and the second is it eradicates the sinful activities or the miseries of material existence. But here in the first chapter, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is going to speak mainly about bhakti. In this essence of Madhurya Kandambini, the different stages of Bhajana Kriya, the overview. I didn't really include this, the outline about bhakti. But bhakti is, he's going to define what bhakti is and what it isn't, and who gives bhakti, how it's received. In other words, there are different stages, as most of us may know, beginning with adau, shraddha. At the beginning, there's faith. And then sadhu sangha, namely the association of devotees, tya, bhajana kriya, then the execution of devotional activities, regulated sadhana bhakti, and then anartha nivritti syat. From that comes the inspiration to become free from the offenses and the aparads, and then from that comes the stage of anartha nivritti, and then comes nishta, for steady execution of devotional service. Tata ruchis tato ata shaktis. From there comes a taste for devotional service, and from that sprouts the asakti, and the mind is fixed upon Krishna. Maya sakta manaparta yogam yunjan manashaya. By practice of yoga, we hope to come to the stage where our mind is always fixed upon Krishna. And then tata tato bhavas. Then the real feelings towards Krishna begin to develop. That's our actual life, which is the actual emotional feelings towards Krishna, not just intellectual, but the actual relationship to Krishna based upon loving emotions. And then finally, prema du chanti, the bhav or the feelings thicken, and then one develops his actual life called prema, and from there actual life begins. Prema, sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, and mahabhava. So we probably won't get a chance to talk very much about mahabhava. But if we can understand in the beginning what actual bhakti is, everyone has bhakti, actually. That bhakti is now dormant in the sense that it hasn't actually expanded himself fully. Prabhupada compares bhakti in the nectar of devotion to, in the beginning, one has love for his body. Actually, our love is really for ourselves. Everyone loves themselves, first of all. And then, in conditioned life, then we we become aware of our body, we next love our body. And then we may love our family members, then we may love our friends, we may love our society, we may love our country, and that may expand all human beings or whatever. But bhakti, or the feeling that we have, can only be unrestricted and ever-expanding and actually satisfy ourselves completely only when it's directed towards Krishna. So that is known as faith. Itatura mula nishechanena trityanti tatskanda bujo pasaka. The faith that if I give my love to Krishna, shabha, shabda, shara shabde. Shraddha means sabde, vishva sakahe, sudridani schai, krishne bhakti kaile, sarva karma kritahai. That actual faith means, if I simply love Krishna, then I'll feel completely satisfied. All my other desires will be satisfied. So love is the very basic principle of our existence. It's only according to where we're putting that love that we get a result. So Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakur, he begins his Madhura Kandambini by trying to explain that Krishna is the actual object of everyone's love. That he's Rasa Vaisaha, he's the actual source of all loving sentiments, and that his appearance in this world is causeless. That Krishna comes into the world due to his own desire to. It's not caused by any material arrangement. He's not forced to come as a conditioned soul is. And similarly, the energy which reveals Krishna to the soul, namely bhakti, that also comes as its own accord, causelessly. He wants to explain that because he wants to make the point that it is not by karma, by rituals, it is not by jnana, or the cultivation of empiric knowledge, or by yoga, that one can actually get bhakti, one can expand bhakti. So bhakti may seem to us a very esoteric point. The personification of bhakti is who? Who's the personification of bhakti? Who's Bhakti Devi? Yeah, so Srimati Radharani is the personification of the service attitude towards Krishna. So bhakti is actually a service attitude. Bhakti runs everything, both in the material world and in the spiritual world. Prabhupada says that in the material world, the materialist, he works hard during the week, and it's called boga, which is that type of form of bhakti, and then at the end he renounces tyaga at the end of the week and retires to the country somewhere. So in the material world, bhakti manifests itself as boga tyaga, and in the spiritual world, it's loving service to Krishna. Daivi prakriti ashritya. So bhakti in this material world also appears, but it doesn't appear on the result of shubha, karma, or pious activities. Nor does it, of course, appear because of impious activities. But it doesn't appear according to pious activities either. As it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Prabhupada gave us the definition for Krishna consciousness as what is that definition for Krishna consciousness? Rasa bhavita mati, kriyatam kutopi labhyate, tatra loyam muyam ekalam janma koti sukritar na labhyate. Krishna bhakti means that if we want to become absorbed in Krishna bhakti or loving Krishna, rasa bhavita mati, it means that one's mind or consciousness becomes absorbed in rasa. Here in the material world, when we become in love with our body, or become with love with other people's bodies or conceptions, whatever, it doesn't actually produce rasa in the same way. But becoming absorbed in loving Krishna, then the result should be experienced as rasa, or a transcendental taste, which ultimately develops into attachment and feelings, and then ultimately prema, which is intensified loving feelings towards Krishna. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavi tamati kriyatam kutopi labhyate. Now the question is, where do you find bhakti? The whole world, probably said, the whole world is searching for Krishna, or actually they're searching for a loving relationship which goes on forever. In the past, most of the movies and plays, the hero and the heroine would drive off in their Cadillac or their Rolls Royce, or ride down in the horse, depending what year it was, and they'd live happily forever after. So this was the ideal, Happiness in the material world actually means relationship. Of course, nowadays it may mean for some people intoxication, or it may mean, you know, a good meal, whatever. Shanti rasa or something. But that's a very low end of the happiness scale, that actually even in the material world, happiness means relationship. You never see a movie where the hero, all he does all the movie is eat and sleep. There's some relationship. At worst, he gets up after eating and sleeping and shoots a few people, then goes back to sleep so he can get enough energy, get up again and shoot a few more people. There's always some kind of relationship, either ghastly rasa or something. Generally, it's, you know, madhurya, the material, conjugal relationship. But of course, nowadays it's going towards more ghastly relationships. But there's some relationship in any case. So that original relationship is with Krishna. When Krishna walked into the arena, everyone to battle against the wrestlers. Mustika, Chanura, Shalya, Tosha. Everyone saw Krishna differently. It wasn't everyone said, oh, there's Krishna, he's the guy with the flute, he's a cowherd boy. Now, everyone saw Krishna differently according to their personal relationship with him. That everyone has a relationship with Krishna, even in the material world. That everyone is dancing with Krishna, but those who are dancing trying to imitate Krishna, they're dancing with Krishna's Maya. And those who are dancing trying to please Krishna, they're dancing Krishna's rasa dance. So this rasa dance is not only the rasa dance in that Krishna enjoys with the gopis, but everyone is engaged either with Krishna's illusory energy or engaged in dancing with Krishna in the rasa dance. But the whole world is full of Krishna singing, and everyone is understanding that song in a different way, according to their relationship with Krishna. So when Krishna walked into the wrestling arena, the wrestlers saw him as a thunderbolt. The ladies there, the young girls, they saw him as Cupid personified, and he began to increase their lust. The members of the Yadu dynasty saw him as the most illustrious ancestor. Mother Yasoda, Nana Maharaj, Vasudeva, and Devaki saw him as their most beloved child. The yogis there who were meditating saw him as the super soul. Kamsa saw him as death personified. And those who were unintelligent saw him as a person who was dull and unintelligent. Atmanavan Manite Jagat, that everyone sees according to their particular consciousness. So that relationship with Krishna everyone has, but that relationship is developed through bhakti. So how bhakti appears, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he'll explain it according to shastric evidence. But rather going to every single shastric evidence, I'll just give a summary of what that evidence is. First of all, he said, just as Krishna is causeless and he comes by his own will. So similarly, bhakti, being non-different from Krishna, also descends by his own will. And he uses he quotes a verse which uses the word yadrichaya. So this word yadrichaya means by its own cause. There's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Punso Puro Dharmo Yato Bhaktiya Ahokshaje Yahaituke that this devotional service has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So this means that devotional service is not of this material world, it's of a different energy. It's of an energy that has nothing to do with ahaituki. Hetu, the cause, is not something mundane, and it's supersedity, it produces complete satisfaction of the soul. And the word yadrichaya by its own causelessly, some people they translate it as perhaps by good fortune. But as I mentioned, it's not by good fortune, because good fortune or shubha karma, which comes into the realm of karma, good karma, bad karma. Here he says that, but then bhakti becomes dependent upon material pious activities, dependent on material karma, but this is also contrary to its independent, self-manifesting nature. In other words, according to Shastra, bhakti is not dependent, doesn't come about by any good, pious activity. Of course, this is a very subtle point, because we try to act in the mode of goodness, and hoping that by acting in the mode of goodness, we get a chance to receive bhakti. But that's not necessarily true. Just like, for instance, you may hear that if you want to go to India, the best place to go is to the airport. Isn't that right? Generally, you don't go down to the... I mean, some people may go down to the train station, or they may go down to the bus station, or they may go down to the local gym or something. But they may not find it very easy to get to India that way. The best place to go is to the airport, because that's where most of the planes take off, especially if you want to fly. You don't go up to your roof and, you know, hope that the plane makes this unexpected stop. So similarly, the opportunity to go to the spiritual world through bhakti is best done by coming to the mode of goodness, where most of the planes take off going to Vaikuntha. So similarly, it is expected that it would be easier to get bhakti from if one comes to the mode of goodness, because at least then one can understand what bhakti is. In the modes of ignorance and passion, one speculates what exactly, or one doesn't even think about it, what actually is bhakti. But in the mode of goodness, it becomes clearer the value of bhakti and exactly what bhakti is. And therefore, in the mode of goodness, when one has knowledge and one has become more or less free from the tendency for other types of activities, one can choose to take up the path of bhakti more easily. Because bhakti can be taken up from any point of view or from any mode of material nature, but it's most easily done if one comes to the mode of goodness. But the mode of goodness is not the cause of bhakti any more than going to the airport will automatically take you to India. There's a few other things that have to go on before you arrive in India. So the Shubha Karma is not described as the cause of bhakti. Bhakti is independent of the mode of goodness. Actually, maybe I can ask someone to go upstairs in my room and on my desk. Could be the Madhuri Kandamini. There may be three of them. You can take all three of them. So, we cannot accept the mode of goodness as the cause of bhakti. Now, if the mode of goodness is not the cause of bhakti, and if bhakti is causeless, then what is the cause of bhakti? So, when they say that Krishna's unreserved mercy is the cause of bhakti appearing in someone's heart, but then if it's Krishna's unreserved mercy, unqualified mercy, then why do some people have bhakti and some people don't have bhakti? If Krishna loves everyone and he wants to give everyone bhakti causelessly, then why doesn't everyone have bhakti? So that can't be the final cause, because obviously everyone doesn't have bhakti or Krishna bhakti. So then what is the cause? Now if Krishna appears to be partial to some, and he is partial to some. He's partial towards his devotees. So his devotees, they get bhakti, and others don't get bhakti. In other words, some people, if they come in contact with Krishna, they get killed by him, which is not completely bhakti. Krishna says, Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya tridiskritam. So he loves his devotees, and he kills demons. So Krishna seems to be partial towards some, and in some ways, and antagonistic towards others. So Krishna's unqualified mercy can't be the cause of everyone getting bhakti, because everyone doesn't get bhakti from Krishna. But even if Krishna doesn't give unqualified mercy, then he gives bhakti through his devotees. That is seen that Krishna's devotees give, through Krishna empowers his devotees to give bhakti. But then again, it can't be the unqualified mercy of the devotees, because the devotees also are qualified in who they give mercy to. But this is not a fault on the part of the devotees. This is the natural characteristic of the Madhyama Adhikara. Thank you. It's the natural characteristics of the Madhyama Adhikara is that he gives bhakti to others. Prema Maitri Kripo Peka Yat Karoti Samadhyamaha. That for the Madhyama Adhikari, he sees four different things. He sees, first of all, the Supreme Lord, Ishvara, tad adineshu balisheshu dvitsatsu jai. He sees Ishvara and prema. He tries to love Krishna. That's his main business. The Kanisa Adhikari, his main business is he sees the deity and he tries to figure out exactly who this person is and what he can do from it. More or less. You may think, well, he looks very nice. But the bottom line is, you know, what's in it for me? But the Madhyama Adhikari, he sees Ishvara and he wants to love him. He sees that the real value is how I can develop my relationship with the Supreme Lord. And for the devotee, adineshu, Ishvara te tad adineshu, he wants to develop Maitriya, friendship. And for the innocent, balisheshu, this kripa. So Krishna has an energy called kripa shakti, and that kripa shakti is given to the Madhyama Adhikari. The Madhyama Adhikari, he tries to figure out who is qualified to receive Krishna's mercy, and then he tries to give those persons Krishna's mercy or kripa. But the amazing thing is that although the devotee may have a little mercy or love to give to the person, by Krishna's arrangement, when he sees his devotee trying to give Krishna's love to someone, then Krishna himself manifests his kripa through that devotee. So not only the person gets the devotee's mercy, but he gets Krishna's mercy simultaneously. Therefore, not only the person who's receiving the mercy gets Krishna's mercy, but also the devotee who's giving Krishna's mercy also gets Krishna's mercy by acting as an instrument to give Krishna's mercy. So he gets to experience what Krishna's mercy is by trying to give it to others. So the actual prasad of Krishna, and Krishna in Bhagavad Gita mentions prasad in several places. Raga, dvesha, vimukta is two. Vishan, indriyas, charan, atma, vaishara, videyatma, prasadam, adigachati. So this prasad that the devotee he's able to give and that Krishna gives is, or this bhakti, is by the devotee trying to give the bhakti to others. But where the bhakti that the devotee is trying to give to others, where did that come from? In other words, because the bhakti is in the devotee's heart, he becomes inspired to give kripa to others or mercy to others. But where did that bhakti come from? It came from Bhakti Devi. So Bhakti Devi within the heart of the devotee inspires the devotee to give mercy to others, and because the devotee is inspired to give mercy to others, therefore Krishna becomes inspired to give the devotee mercy to give to others. But the original source of that desire to give mercy to others is because the bhakti which is in the heart, which comes from Bhakti Devi. So if you want to give anyone the credit, it's Bhakti Devi or Srimati Radharani. And of course Krishna is a good assistant because he gives his mercy along with Bhakti Devi. So ultimately bhakti comes from bhakti, from Radha and Krishna. But the Madhyama Adhikari is able to act as an instrument, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tasmad Twamyutishi Sholabhasva Didva Shatrum Bhushvara Jansramidan Mayaevata Nyata Purvameva Nimitra Matram Bhavasavasachin. Just get up and do something. Just don't sit around and lament or whatever you do. Get up and do something. You know, just become an instrument. Although you may think you have so many different enemies all around you, but don't worry about it, because just do something and become an instrument for me, and everything else will be taken care of. So that becoming an instrument for Krishna on the part of Arjuna, of course, he did act on behalf of Krishna, but also we should understand that Krishna's potency or bhakti also has its origin in simply the devotee desiring to give it to others. Although it's the original cause is Srimati Radharani or Bhakti Devi, but still not everyone is equally inspired to give mercy to others. So the receptivity to the energy of bhakti or loving feelings, this goes to the credit of the devotee. Just like the sun may be shining, and of course all credit goes to the sun for shining, giving off its heat and light, but those who take the advantage of it, they get the credit for taking advantage of it also, and the benefit of doing so. So in this way, it's resolved that actually bhakti is causeless, and bhakti comes from bhakti, although we can see other factors are also involved in the distribution of mercy or unalloyed love. And then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tries to explain to us how bhakti is superior to karma, jnana, and yoga. So karma means ritualistic activities. Most of us were not engaged in ritualistic activities before we joined the movement. And we may not, there may be so many words to us, karma, what does karma actually mean? Maybe karma, good karma, you know, or karma goes around, whatever. But actually karma in this context means that in the Vedic context there are certain activities which produce auspicious results, such as high birth, material wealth, beauty, and education. There are pious activities recommended in the Vedic literature, mostly grouped around karmakandic ritualistic activities, such as offering sacrifices or giving in charity, taking bath, etc. So these are very popular activities or appealing activities to one on the material concept of life. And for those who are distressed due to the material concept of life, there is an alternative known as dhyana. Try to understand that we're not this body. Just like in most classes, we may hear once or twice that we're not this body. First of all, we hear how everything is bad, and then we find out we're not this body, so we feel a little bit better. But that's not the end of it. Even above karma and jnana, of course, jnana does not mean that people just sat around talking how they're not their body. Jnana was also a process of austerities and renunciation, etc. Just like Prakashananda and his thousands of sannyas disciples, they were engaged in jnana. And that means they not only talked about how they're not their body, or they read Vedanta Sutra, which explains that they're not their body, but they underwent great austerities and fasts and penances. Not a very simple process. Not a very appealing process in this age. As a matter of fact, when Prakashananda Saraswati heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is dancing and chanting and taking prasad, he said he's not a sannyasi. That he's only a pretender. Because sannyasis, they don't chant and dance and smile and be happy. They're just supposed to think of Brahman. And then there is yoga, which is a very complicated process, which Krishna summarizes in the Bhagavad Gita, which is meant to control ultimately the mind and fix it upon the supersoul through very controlled, regulated habits and ultimately disciplining the mind, beginning with pranayama and pratyahara, and then spending all one's time visualizing and contemplating the supersoul. So this karma, jnana, and yoga, they all get their life from bhakti. The soul, which is in the body, whatever he's doing, he's inspired to do it only because bhakti is present. And because karma, jnana, and yoga have some basic connection with Krishna, therefore the devotee is able to get some taste and relish and inspiration to do these things and knowledge how to do it only because the bhakti is there. By doing karma, jnana, and yoga, one will not get bhakti, but without bhakti, one will not be able to execute anything. It's not the body that moves, it's the soul that moves, even within these processes. Even the person who's, you know, with these tops, these yo-yos, you know, somehow or another, he's inspired to do that due to bhakti. Although it's not a very high grade of, very intense quality of bhakti, but bhakti actually moves everything in the material world. So even karma, jnana, and yoga, which are very attractive for one in the material concept of life, they're inspired by bhakti. So bhakti is superior to karma, jnana, and yoga, and it is without bhakti, these things don't have any, can't work. And bhakti is superior to karma, jnana, and yoga because of many different reasons. One of them is that in the path of karma, that even if you make a small mistake, then you can't get any result from it. In other words, if you execute a ritualistic activity and you don't perform it perfectly, you get absolutely zero result. And in the path of jnana, if you're not perfect in karma, then the result may be completely negative. For instance, there is one twasta, he had executed one sacrifice in order to kill his enemy, namely Indra. As you probably know the story, Indra, he was defeated by the demigods, by the demons, and so he went to Vishwarup, who is the son of Twasta, who is a Brahmin, who's also, he was born, on one side of his family were the demons, the other side were the demigods. So the demigods asked, at this time Indra had offended Brihaspati, and Brihaspati had disappeared, and the demigods had lost all their luster and all their qualities and all their opulence and all their power. And so they needed another priest. Lord Brahma suggested you ask Vishwarup to become your priest. Indra went there with all the demigods, and Vishwarup said, all right, I'll do it. I'll offer you sacrifices on your behalf. So he's offering sacrifices, but on one side he had the demons as his family members, the other side he had the demigods. So he would offer the sacrifices to the demigods into the fire, and secretly he would offer sacrifices on behalf of the demons. When Indra found out about that, that Vishwarupa was a double agent, then he immediately came there and cut off his three heads. So his father heard about the assassination, and he decided to kill Indra. And he had this enormous sacrifice that went on for days. He had all these priests, and they were chanting all these Vedic mantras to create a demon who would kill Indra. Unfortunately for Tvasta, but fortunately for Indra, during the sacrifice, one of the priests chanted one word wrong. Instead of chanting the word long, he chanted the word short. There's long and short vowels, ah or ah. So he pronounced ah, and the whole sacrifice turned around. And instead of getting a demon who would kill Indra, he got a demon who would be killed by Indra. So that was a difference due to one vowel being pronounced incorrectly. So that's one example. Another example is when Krishna cut off the head of Kasiraj and threw it into the city after his fight with Pundraka, then the citizens and the residents of Pundraka thought that the head was Krishna's. But then when they found it was the head of Kasiraj, they became disturbed, especially Kasiraj's son, who immediately undertook a sacrifice or austerities to please Shiva. So Shiva appeared after some time and said, do a sacrifice, and I'll send a demon to kill your enemy. And if the demon can't kill your enemy because he's a Brahmin, then I'll send my Brahma Rakshashas and they can go and kill the Brahmin. So they had a big sacrifice with 12 Brahmins. They were all chanting the mantras. A huge demon appeared with a trident, and he said, what should I do for you? He said, go to Dwarka and kill Krishna. So the demon went to Dwarka. Krishna was playing, he was playing dice, but it's probably right, so he was playing chess. I guess it doesn't look like he was gambling, maybe. He's playing with Uddhava, and he said, don't worry about it. So he just picked up his Sudarshan Chakra, threw it at the demon. The Sudarshan Chakra began to heat up and became hotter than the fiery demon. So the demon, although he was a fiery demon burning up everywhere, he began to feel cold. So he decided to go home and get a sweater. He said, wait here, I'll be right back. So he immediately fled back to Varanasi, Kasi. And there, the Sudarshan Chakra, well, first of all, the demon went back. He figured, the sacrifice is all over. My duty now is to kill everyone who performed the sacrifice. So he went back and burnt everyone, including Kasi Raja's son, to ashes. And then the Sudarshan Chakra entered into Varanasi and burnt the whole city. Prabhupada said, worse than an atomic weapon. The whole thing was just ashes. So the moral of the story is that if you think karmakanda section is good, you have to become a little careful, because if you do something wrong, you may wind up as a pile of ashes. Therefore, a little mistake in the karmakanda or even gyanakanda practices, you get the opposite result. The other is that bhakti, so in the chanting, one can chant in any place and any time under any circumstances, for instance. But in karma, jnana, and yoga, there's very specific times and places in order to execute the practices. So that's not true of bhakti. Nor is bhakti dependent upon the purity of the chanter. That even if the chanter is impure, then still the result will be there. But that's not true of jnana, karma, yoga. Even a little impurity means that the result won't be there. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur He quotes one verse, a famous verse, in this regard, which probably most of us have heard. It's Vikritam Vraja Vadubir Idam Chavishno Shadanvito Nushrinuyat Ata Varnayat Ya Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilabhya Kamam Redrogam Ash Vapinot Yachirena Dira. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan, having obtained the Lord's pure devotional service, he quickly becomes sober and conquers lust, the disease of the heart. Has anyone heard this verse before? In other words, to summarize the verse, it's that even if you're lusty, if you hear the Lord's pastimes, you'll become purified with lust, specifically the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So this is a good example that this idea that we should receive bhakti from the Madhyama Adhikari. Because Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, he's giving the qualifications of bhakti, especially above karma, jnana, and yoga. And he's citing a verse which I had heard before, but in a different context. And matter of fact, nowadays, you may hear the verse again. There's a whole group of devotees who utilize this verse, or the essence of this verse, to support their philosophy. That is, the philosophy is that even if I'm not qualified, if I hear the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, then because they're purifying, therefore I'll become purified. And Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura is explaining this verse in the context of one of the qualifications of bhakti, is that even if the chanter is impure, that if he hears the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, he becomes purified. The point I want to make in this context is that Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura is speaking, his audience, he's assuming, is basing their understanding on Guru Sadhana and Shastra. So Prabhupada, this verse appears in many parts of the Bhagavatam and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and also in the Morning Walk, and it has to be understood in context. In this context, is that it's true that bhakti is purifying, but everyone should accept bhakti, the type of devotional service, the form that bhakti comes in, according to their particular qualification. Otherwise, Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura wouldn't have had to explain bhakti in many different levels. Śrīla Prabhupāda, in the Nectar of Instruction, he explains that there are three major classifications of devotees: Kanista Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. So the question is, why should I bother about trying to figure out who's on what level? Why should I bother reading these books? After all, if I just chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam and dance in ecstasy, everything will be all right. Isn't that right? So why should I bother studying these books? Every time I read them, I fall asleep anyhow. No one could really understand them. They're too esoteric, and they say so many things that seem to contradict each other, and everyone has their own opinion. And if I read it, I'm just going to have my opinion, you know. So why bother going through the whole, you know, tapasya of reading these books? So one of the reasons why we should go through the tapasya is that we should understand which level we're on, so we won't become fooled and think that we should act on a higher level than we're actually aren't on, that we're not on. Nor should we act on a lower level. We should understand what the level of devotion we're on and act accordingly. Similarly, we should understand who's on what level so we can understand how to relate to them in terms of devotional service. Just like if someone is not strictly following the actual parampara, although we should respect them, then we should not take their instructions and follow their instructions strictly. That would be a great mistake. So this point is very important about, for instance, the gopis' love for Krishna, hearing about it. In Los Angeles in 1976, there was a what's called the Gopi Bhava Club. Has anyone ever heard of the Gopi Bhava Club? Any members here? Former members? Better than the Mickey Mouse Club, I think. But there used to be a Gopi Bhava Club. And the Gopi Bhava Club, which was a scandal back then, ISKCON scandals. Did you hear about it? Oh, really? And he was involved too. No, I always knew it. The guy was a rat. He stole a sweet ball from me. I knew he'd fall down. So the Gopi Bhava Club, they used to get together in Los Angeles, some of the devotees. The head of the Gopi Bhava Club is now the head Riddhik, one of the head Riddhik persons. So they used to get together and simply read Radha and Krishna's pastimes with the gopis from Prabhupada's book. There are not that many pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis, but that's all they used to read. And they had a man's Gopi Bhava Club and a woman's Gopi Bhava Club. And they used to meditate on these things. So this is pretty innocent. It was just from Prabhupada's books, you know. If someone brought another book, they'd say, you're in Maya. This is not authorized. You're kicked out of the Gopi Bhava Club. So that went on. Of course, everyone has their side of the story. But Prabhupada heard about it, and he gave his reaction to it. So I just have a little bit here. But Prabhupada was not very pleased to hear that they were just reading about Radha and Krishna's pastimes. So does that mean that we should not read about Radha and Krishna's pastimes? That it's something bad to do? Is that what it means? One time Prabhupada was talking about how we shouldn't publish in Back to Godhead these stories about Radha and Krishna. But that, he said, that doesn't mean we should boycott the gopis. We actually are not against the gopis. You know, it's not that someone says the name of Chandravali or Radharani or Lalita and we say, oh my God, they're you know, do you know what you're talking about? I'm going to report you to the GVC talking about Gopi Bhav, Rasika Kata. No, we're not against. It means that there's something called reading the books in sequence, that one can read the literature in sequence, Prabhupada's book, but to dwell on a certain topic, imagining oneself to have inherited that rasa or assumed that rasa, this is considered sahajiyism. That's what Ravinasrupa was talking about today, instead of pranali. That there is a methodology where one is given a certain rasa with Krishna, and then one tries to meditate upon that rasa. I know one devotee, he's my godbrother, I actually even visited him one time. He thought he was a peacock. His siddha pranali was a peacock. I walked in and saw him at that time, he'd go, coo, coo, coo. Because he was practicing to be a peacock. I think he gave up that rasa now. There's other ones who had more exciting rasas. But that rasa kind of, didn't really turn him on. In any case, that was the idea. You get a certain rasa, you meditate upon it. But Prabhupada did not appreciate that. This was the siddha pranali, this idea that you can be given a rasa and meditate on. Prabhupada was talking about that. And this is just an expert. There's a whole conversation. I just took little excerpts from it. So Prabhupada said, Hari Sari, because sadhana bhakti is a gradual process, they immediately want the highest perfection quickly. And Prabhupada's reaction was, that is the danger. But if they go at once to rasa lila, because they are not trained up, neither they are liberated, they'll think this rasa lila is just like our young boys, young girls mixed together, have sex like that. So it is supported our, why should we restrict to no illicit sex? Know this, no rules and regulations. We shall do all nonsense. That's all. And become a gopi. It is very good to aspire to become high court judge, but how you can become a high court judge without qualification? That they are not thinking. They have no qualification, they have illicit sex, pregnant, going to abortion, and they're a high court judge. So this, of course, if you read the whole conversation, the impression that one generally gets is that they're talking about they're reading Radha Krishna's pastimes in the temple room. Hardly anyone ever does anymore. You know, we at the beginning of the movement, at night, before we'd go to take rest, we'd have a glass of hot milk. At that time, bananas were popular, with some bananas sometimes. And someone would read Krishna book. So this idea now, we heard nowadays that people at night, they're reading Krishna book, we think, wow, this is quite good. And Prabhupada, of course, these devotees were just reading only specific pastimes. The Prabhupada's conclusion was, they have no qualification, they'll have illicit sex, they'll get pregnant, they're going to get abortion, and they're actually high court judge. In other words, Prabhupada says, first deserve, and then desire. If a lawyer wants to become a high court judge, then he may be qualified. But if someone who's never even gone to law school wants to become a high court judge, then it's ludicrous. So similarly, if one wants to jump immediately to Radha and Krishna's pastimes, then it's, first of all, let them become qualified. The desire is good, but then become qualified, and then desire. Not that you simply desire and that's enough. No, the qualification first, and then the desire. And then Prabhupada later on says, that sahajiya tendency is very easy to take up. Thinking of Radha Krishna Leela, that is in a liberated state, not in the conditioned stage. And then Prabhupada talks about how that there's one potter, and he had some cups. And he put the cups down, and he went to sleep. And he was dreaming that if I go to the market and I sell all these cups, then I'll make so much profit, and then I can buy more cups, and then I'll sell them also and make even more profit. And eventually I'll become a rich man. And when I become really rich, I'll buy a big house, get a very beautiful wife and children, and if my wife is disobedient, then I'll just kick her. So he kicked his foot out during his dream and broke all the pots. And that was the end of his dream. That was the end of his pots, too. So Prabhupada said, first of all, be a rich man, then do all these things. How you shall kick your wife? This is going on. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my guru Maharaj found me rascal number one. Therefore he ordered, you cannot study Vedanta. You chant Hare Krishna. They will not read this portion. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he posed himself as a rascal. And then Ramaswar Prabhu said, Srila Prabhupada, some devotees, sometimes they feel that in ISKCON, we're talking so much about the business of how to spread Krishna consciousness. But we're not talking enough about Krishna's pastimes. Krishna Katha, they say. So that's another reason why they want to read all these pastimes. Prabhupada, then let them read what kind of Krishna Katha. The Krishna Katha test is as soon as they'll get the taste, he'll lose this taste. That is the, what is this nonsense? Ramaswara, won't it purify them? That's what they say. It'll purify me. Prabhupada, what you are purified, you have become putrefied, not purified. Devotees, Jai Prabhupada. Ramaswara, you can become purified, and sometimes you can increase your, no. You can read, be purified, you can read, but where is your purification? Tama Krishna Maharaj. Putrefaction. Prabhupada, these books are for reading. By reading, you become purified. In other words, Prabhupada is making the point. You can read them, but if you your purification should be seen, not just by reading that you'll become. By reading, you can become purified, but if you become a sahajiya and start imagining that you're actually Radha and Krishna, or you're some gopi in a pastime, then you've actually become, instead of purified, you've become putrefied. And then there's a break. In 1935, our Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went to Radhakund for Kartik Vrat. So at that time, he's reading Upanishads. So first of all, these Babaji's, they were coming. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had come to Radhakund. He's giving some class, so they used to come. But as soon as they saw that he's reading Upanishads, they stopped coming. They said, they're gyanis, they're not bhaktis. So, Tama Krishna, what they said, what do they want to hear? Dashama Skanda, the 10th canto? Prabhupada, like that. So Prabhupada condemned them, they're not living in Radhakund, they're living in Narakund. I heard it, they're living in Narakund. And just another point in this regard. Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the same verse he quotes, I'm not going to go over the whole purport, but this is in the topics between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in their discussion. At first, of course, Ramananda Roy quoted about Vanashram Dharma as the solution to the perfection of life. He went on to quote about becoming detached from material life, and then he quoted, etc., etc. Finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the idea from Lord Brahma that one should devote himself to hearing about Krishna Katha. And this will inspire one to engage one's body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna, and that, therefore conquer Krishna by one's service attitude. And this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted, but then he said, if you know more, please go on. And then he talked about becoming free from the all material considerations, and then he quoted the verse, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavitamati, as the beginning of actual devotional service, absorbing the minds and the mellows of Krishna. So that's actually the beginning of devotional service. And then they talked about Shantaras, Dasaras, Sakyaras, Vatsayaras, and now, then finally Madhuryamas, not finally, but they talked about Madhuryaras. And talking about Madhuryaras, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, out of these topics people listen to, which is the best for all living entities? And Ramananda Roy replied, hearing about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna is most pleasing to the ear. And Prabhupada quotes in the purport this verse, Vikrititam Vraja Vadubhira Idam Cha Vishnu. It's by hearing about the loving pastimes between Radha and Krishna, even if one has a lusty heart, then all the lusts will be dissipated. And then Prabhupada repeats the same thing. A liberated person who hears about the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna is not inclined to have lusty desires. One mundane rogue once said that when the Vaishnavas chant the name Radha, Radha, he simply remembers a barber's wife named Radha. This is a practical example. Unless one is liberated, he should not try to hear about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna. If one is not liberated and listens to the rasa dance, he may remember his own mundane activities and illicit connections with some woman whose name may also be Radha. In this conditioned stage, one should not even try to remember such things. By practicing the regular principles, one should try to rise to the platform of spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Then and only then one should hear about Radha Krishna Leela. Although these affairs may be very pleasing both to the conditioned and to liberated souls, the conditioned souls should not try to hear them. The talks between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are conducted on the platform of liberation. So, although it says here about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna will purify our hearts even if we're lusty, but for most of us, when we hear the Krishna book or even the 10th canto, it shouldn't be just, we shouldn't just dwell on these, I mean for all of us actually, if we were liberated, just to set the example, that one reads the Bhagavatam in sequence rather than trying to imagine himself that here's a verse that supports hearing about the loving pastimes between Radha and Krishna, and now I should go and read books like Govinda Lilamrita or Ujjvala Nilamani, because that way all the lusty feelings within my heart, they'll all be dissipated. I know, and there's one movement that's going on where the head of the movement has this idea, and one of his followers, he came to me one time because he couldn't follow the regular principles. So I was giving the course in the on the Shraddha to Prema in Vrindavan at that time. This is some years ago. A few years ago, actually. And he was saying, well, I can't, he was giving advice how to follow the four regular principles. He couldn't avoid illicit sex. But he was the one that, this particular devotee, had translating the Jiva Dharma about Raganuga Bhakti. So, I couldn't figure out exactly how he, but anyhow, that was the idea, that if you hear these pastimes, even if you're lusty, then you'll become free from lust. But as far as I understand, the devotee is still not following the four regular principles, although he's still part of the movement. So this is actually a dangerous proposition, that one should try to understand this philosophy in context, that although bhakti has wonderful qualities, such as it frees one from lust, but it has to be done appropriately, not whimsically, according to Shastra. Similarly, bhakti doesn't have to be performed according to time, place, and circumstances. But that doesn't mean we don't perform bhakti according to time, place, and circumstance. For a liberated soul, on the spontaneous platform, like Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda, in any circumstance, they remember Krishna. But we try to arrange our lives in such a way is that we have the best opportunity to remember Krishna. That's called sadhana bhakti. And from sadhana bhakti, if one's performing it properly, vaidhi bhakti turns into raganuga sadhana bhakti. But the same activity may go on, but the feeling or the sentiment changes from willingness and enthusiasm to do the activity to doing it out of duty, due to vaidhi or regulation. So I think I'll stop here about. So far today, what I tried to describe is that bhakti is just as Krishna comes out of his own will, So similarly, bhakti also appears out of its own will. And just as Krishna is causeless, so bhakti also has no material cause. It doesn't come out of pious or impious activities. It arises out of its own will. The cause may be seen as Krishna, but causes bhakti can't be said to be unqualifiedly causeless because Krishna doesn't himself, he differentiates between different persons. So Krishna gives his bhakti through the devotee, and the Madhyama Adhikari, specifically the preacher, he discriminates who to give bhakti to and who he doesn't give bhakti to. So the cause may be seen as the preacher giving bhakti, but bhakti is in the heart of the preacher, and that bhakti, or that inspiration to give bhakti to others, actually rises out of the bhakti in his own heart, and that bhakti comes from bhakti, is bhakti. So the causeless nature of bhakti, being given to others, actually comes from bhakti. Although the devotee, the Madhyama Adhikari specifically, has its part to play, and Krishna empowers the devotee with bhakti when he sees the devotee wanting to give bhakti to others. So bhakti is causeless, just as Krishna is causeless, although it's received through the Madhyama Adhikari, and bhakti has certain qualifications, not all of which I've gone over, but the ones I've gone over specifically is that bhakti is the cause, is the life for jnana, karma, and yoga, and bhakti is above karma, jnana, and yoga, not dependent upon it. That karma, jnana, and yoga, if not executed properly, give a different, a contrary result. But anyone who executes bhakti appropriately will get a positive result, even if he can't do it perfectly. And bhakti, if in karma, jnana, and yoga, if there's lust, then one will not get a result. But in bhakti, if it's done appropriately, not only one will get the result, but that bhakti will also purify the heart if it's done appropriately. And there are many other arguments, but I don't think we have to go over all of them. So the next class is what they'll go over, before I ask if there's any questions, is that he goes over shraddha, beginning with the state of shraddha, which he briefly deals with, to bhajana kriya. The idea of the exercise, as far as I can see, is that we can get a good idea how far we've progressed and where we can expect to progress. So it's a very exciting prospect in the consciousness, the experience, the happiness, the awakening of consciousness that one can expect when he progresses through the different levels of Krishna consciousness should enlighten and inspire one to make further progress. Because it's so wonderful what one can expect as a result. And even if we're not feeling that, you know, I'm chanting my rounds every day, I'm trying to come to the program, you know, I'm doing my service, and I'm not really that inspired, I'm not really that enlightened, you know, I'm having so many, you know, I'm struggling, is it really worth it all? You know, and so many people have chanted for so long and they're having the same problems I have, is this, you know, in 20 years am I going to wind up like they are? So we should understand that actually the path of bhakti is wonderful and that unlimited happiness and awareness can be had if one properly performs it. So Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura takes us step by step through the different levels of devotion. We can hear about it, how one's love can develop and what the results are. And he gives us some hint of how to achieve that result. And therefore we can see where we're at now, where we can hope to be in the future. And that should inspire us to stay on the path and try to make some progress. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes. Female in the sense that there's prakriti and purusha. Purusha means enjoyer, and prakriti means that which is enjoyed. So in the material world, everyone is actually purusha, in the sense that everyone's trying to enjoy. That doesn't mean we're enjoying. It means we're trying to enjoy. The mentality is that of enjoyment. Although we're actually apara prakriti, but our mentality is that of a purusha. Now, in the spiritual world, it is said that everyone is prakriti except for Krishna. So that we can take our material concept of what prakriti means in terms of feminine and masculine and try to equate it with what it means in the spiritual world between purusha and prakriti. It doesn't mean anything. You know, this is just a shadow. There, everyone is trying to have Krishna become happy. And that way, the prakriti, and when Krishna is happy, then everyone becomes happy. Of course, Krishna is also trying to make everyone happy, so that relationship is reciprocal. But the difference is that when Krishna becomes happy, everyone becomes happy. Therefore, he's the enjoyer. What's that? Well, when Rana and Krishna, they enjoy their pastimes, then everyone becomes happy. So there, Krishna is the actual Purusha. And Radharani, who's trying to make Krishna happy, and everyone else is trying to make Krishna happy, in that sense, they're Prakriti. It has nothing to do with male and female forms in this material world, or our conception of male and female. How can you recognize when you're lost? Well, probably, in other words, you can, if there's any doubt, then don't read. If you don't know whether to do something, not to do something, then don't do it. But generally, Prabhupada, for instance, in Krishna book, which is one of the first books he gave us to distribute, I mean, I doubt whether anyone's going to become very lusty by reading the Krishna book. I mean, anything's possible, but I wouldn't worry so much about reading the Krishna book. This heart, I mean, it's so innocent. But there are other books, you know, which are like the Govinda Lilamrita. In those books, you know, it appears definitely like, you know, certain parts, Krishna gets intoxicated, you know, other things. It definitely appears like an ordinary, extraordinary relationship between a man and many women. So when they not read the Govinda Lilamrita, just like Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda, he wanted to print the Govinda Lilamrita, and Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura was not very enthusiastic about it. So after repeatedly bringing it up to Bhaktivinoda Thakura, finally said, Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, yes, you can print one copy for yourself. So if one reads the Govinda Lilamrita, one will find it's an extraordinarily, you know, nice book. But there are parts of it which are definitely, you know, that's the origin of the reflection between, you know, man and woman relationships in the material world. But most of Prabhupada's books are not like that. You know, maybe there's little sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But one can read that in order. In other words, there's a difference between specifically reading parts of the book and then trying to enter into them by imagination, by imagining oneself to be, you know, what's called ekadasa bhav. Eka means dasa, means 11. Bhav means feelings. So that's what your Siddha Pranali Guru gives you at the time of initiation. As Ravindra Sruguru mentions, he gives you your vesh, what your clothes are. He gives you your yuti, what group you belong to. He gives you your where you live, what your relationship with Krishna is, what your service, your seva is. All these things are given, 11 of them. And that's what you meditate upon. So that we shouldn't do. What to speak, if we wound up a peacock, we'd be, you know... But that's not recommended, nor should we dwell on a particular rasa. Even there was, I remember in our movement, the beginning, there was the Nityananda Club in St. Louis. One of the devotees, he thought, you know, we should just worship Lord Nityananda. But Prabhupada didn't really appreciate that either. This singling out a particular personality or relationship and imagining ourselves to be intimately connected with that particular personality, just imagination at the beginning. We could read the books, but read them in order. Prabhupada, when he was asked about what our relationship in the material world, he said the material world is a perverted reflection of dasya rasa. So at the beginning, what we should really try and reestablish is our service attitude. So if we wanted to establish a relation with Krishna in a certain rasa, that relationship at the beginning should be that of dasya rasa. Similarly, we worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of service, not in the mood of, you know, any other relationship. And that's the mood we worship the deities, and also in the mood of service. And that service is not, you know, these are my master, I'm the slave, and I got to do something or else he'll get mad at me, and who knows what's going to happen because he's God. No, it's loving service. It's enthusiastic loving service with feeling, but it doesn't step the bounds of friend. You know, it doesn't enter into the Sakya Rasa, and, you know, we go up to Gopinath and say, you know, the food was cold today and I'm going to tie a rope around you and bind you. because it's all your fault. No, we don't, Radha Gopinath, we don't relate to them in that mood. It's the point of loving service to them. There's no, you know, we don't go out with the deities and, you know, play football with them or something. Yes. Well, this is Lakshmi Narayan. All right, we worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Lakshmi Narayan are important, but Radha Gopinath, we worship them in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Not that they've become Lakshmi Narayan. Gopinath has two hands. But the mood is awe and reverence. So awe and reverence in our dictionary usually means kind of fear and, you know, the relationship is very cold. But actually this awe and reverence is more or less that of loving service. And we, out of love, we don't neglect them. The offerings on time, we serve the deities what they want to eat. In that way, we don't overstep the bounds of proper behavior. But it's done in a mood of loving feeling, to please them. No. Therefore, we should treat everyone equally nice. That's generally the nice advantage about being a new devotee, is that one thinks all the devotees are very advanced and very exalted, and then one is in great awe and reverence towards the devotee. So that way one makes a lot of progress, he keeps his enthusiasm. Later on, sometimes it's found that due to familiarity, one starts thinking that actually the devotees were not quite as nice as I thought they were, and therefore one starts to become familiar. And due to that familiarity, he loses his enthusiasm, his respect and enthusiasm, and then suddenly he thinks that something, you know, the devotional doesn't work anymore. So one is actually in the beginning, there's some advantage due to the equal respect that one can pay to all the devotees. That respect should be equally nice, the right service attitude. Then one can advance very nicely in Krishna consciousness. Just follow the process and avoid prajapa. Don't get involved in hearing about this scandal, this devotee did this, and actually, you know, you're feeling enthusiastic and encouraged and you're happy now, but just wait 20 years and you'll get miserable like I am. No, one should avoid these type of understandings. Actually, one is feeling enlivened at any time. Actually, the enlivenment should increase. But due to the fact that one is actually engaged in the process. Just like for instance, as one progresses in Krishna consciousness, then what one should learn is just to become Krishna conscious. That all these thoughts and anxieties and all these misgivings, whatever comes up, these are all under the level of anartha or aparad. So one should just become neglectful, vairagya, detached from these things, and just happily execute the process of devotion. So that's the truth from the beginning to the end. So the way of avoiding it is just to do the activity of bhakti and get the happiness from it, and then one will become attached to the happiness that comes from bhakti. The best way of getting bhakti is to try to get bhakti. Yes. Well, just to try to, first of all, to find out what it is that we're trying to give. And then when we find out what it is, then we can try to give it, and if Krishna sees we're sincere about giving it to others, then he'll help us. We may give a little bit, we may give one drop, and Krishna may give an ocean. So our bhakti is not on the level of Srimati Radharani. We may have one little tiny fraction of a drop to give to, but Krishna is so kind, when he sees that we're trying to give, then his mercy follows whatever little mercy we're trying to give. And then the person gets, so many people may become benefited. Yes. No, he doesn't say that. Well, there's many translations. But the word is used here in the Sanskrit The Sharadan Vito, Sharavan, actually means a very faithful person, one who is actually full of faith. So faith is defined, Prabhupada writes in the Sharavan Labhate Jnanam, Tatpara Samatendriya, Jnana Labha Param Shantim, Nature Nadigachati. That a faithful person who is absorbing transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So a faithful person is one who firmly believes that simply by chanting Hare Krishna, then one will get all success. And over above that, one should fully engage all his senses in the service of Krishna. So that's called a faithful person, not an ordinary person. An ordinary person, if he hears, for instance, Prabhupada writes the Krishna book, but if he hears it from the right source, with the right attitude, then he'll also get benefited. And what is that benefit? Because they appear to be just like ordinary pastimes between a young girl and a young boy. Therefore, he may become attracted. In that way, he may become benefited. But it has to be from the right source and the right attitude. Not that, you know, this is great, you know, what do I need pornography? I got Radha and Krishna's pastime to read about. That attitude will not help one at all. But if you read the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the Krishna book, for instance, which Prabhupada made available, then one will certainly not, one will hear it from the right source, and if the attitude is that these are very sweet pastimes, a very sweet relationship between a young boy and young girl, you know, then one will become benefited, because it's attractive in every respect. Then on the second class platform, the Madhyama Adhikari, when he hears the pastimes, or the activities of Krishna and the philosophy, then it helps him, it becomes inspiring for him for, and encouraging for liberation. To actually come to the real platform of Krishna consciousness. So it's enlightening and encouraging simultaneously to read the Krishna book. And Prabhupada said, but actually the Krishna book is meant for the Paramahansas. When they hear it, they're actually there. They're actually relishing the past, the loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna. It's not a philosophy book. It's not a story book. It's an actual love affair between, you know, Krishna and all his devotees. And they're actually participating in it just by hearing. So there are very distinct levels of experience and understanding when one reads the Krishna book. But they're all benefited, not equally in one sense, but differently. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Salakaya chaksur noitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovishtam stapitam yena bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadam Aiham Dadati Sva Padantikam Bandeham Shigro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigrum Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivasakan Svitam Stra Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinavando Jagatate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kansha Nagorangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Vrishuvana Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyavacha Patidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So thank you for coming again. Yesterday we talked about what is the glories of bhakti. That bhakti means essentially loving service to Krishna. And in the material world, everyone is engaged in that same sentiment, but is perverted. In the material world, our service attitude has been perverted. But that original service attitude can be revived by the process of bhakti yoga. So bhakti originally comes from the Supreme Lord, and that bhakti energy, Srimati Radharani, is invested in the heart of especially the Madhyama Adhikari, who, out of his mercy, delivers that bhakti or distributes that bhakti to others. But his inspiration to distribute bhakti to others comes from bhakti. The original source of all compassion is Srimati Radharani. And if out of her compassion, she inspires the Madhyama Adhikari to deliver that same mercy to others. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna summarizes what that mercy is. The mercy, Krishna says, Aham sarvasya pravo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna says, I'm the source of everything. So Srila Parasaramuni, the father of Srila Vyasadeva, has explained, Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashastriyaha. Quite enthusiastic today. That Krishna, he's all attractive. He's all attractive because he has unlimited beauty. These things are not imaginable, but by some description we may imagine how is it possible that when Krishna was walking in Vrindavan, not only the gopis and the cowherd boys became attracted to Krishna, but even the river Jamuna, the bees, the flowers, the trees, the clouds. Krishna had to be quite attractive to attract all these adamant and inanimate living entities. So Krishna has all beauty, he has all knowledge, he has all strength, he's all fame, he has all wealth, he's all renunciation, he has all these opulences to an unlimited degree, and one who understands this, even to a small extent, he develops bhava. Actually, loving feelings towards Krishna. And how is that process? To develop these loving feelings? Mats chita mach kata prana, bodhi antash parashparam, katayantas chamam nityam tu shanti cha ramanti cha. It's developed because the devotees who are in ecstasy talking about Krishna, they talk about him amongst themselves, and in that talk they become enlightened, and they become very blissful. Tesham sadatam yuktanam bhajantam pritipurvakam tadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So when they become ecstatic and enlivened, then they naturally engage in constant service to Krishna with priti, with loving affection. And then Krishna becomes very pleased, and didami buddhi yogam tam. Within the heart, Krishna gives the intelligence by which one can make progress in spiritual life. Tesham eva nukamparatam, aham a gyana jam tamaha, na shamyam yatma bhavishto gyana dipena bhashvata. When Krishna is compassion, and who's Krishna's compassion? Yes, when Srimati Radharani is the personification of Krishna's compassion, out of compassion, Krishna says, I dwell in the hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So when Krishna sees our efforts to engage in his service constantly with enthusiasm, then he gives us the intelligence and he also purifies our heart so that we can come quickly back to Krishna. We become Krishna conscious. So the process is beginning with the process of hearing about Krishna, hearing about how wonderful Krishna is from the right source, and then we become inspired to serve Krishna. And as we develop our service attitude, then Krishna reveals himself, and we become Krishna conscious. So that compassion of Krishna, that enthusiasm to serve Krishna, comes from hearing from the devotees who have enthusiasm and have practical experience how to serve Krishna. From hearing from those devotees, then we get the inspiration to take up that same service with enthusiasm, and that's what invokes Krishna's compassion. So this is Krishna's mercy. It's not necessarily something very mystical, like the transference of some mystical energy. The actual transference is the sound vibration and the inspiration to serve Krishna. Ye yatamam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna says, out of compassion, all of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So everyone is engaged in service to Krishna, and if we become inspired to engage in Krishna's devotional service, then he reciprocates accordingly. So in the second chapter, then Krishna explains, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur will explain about Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha and Bhajana Kriya. He actually explains all three in one chapter. And he says about Shraddha, not very much. Actually, the word Shraddha comes from the Sanskrit sad. Well, one way of explaining it is sad and da. Sad means the heart, and da means where we put the heart. So our faith actually is determined by what we're attracted to. It is not that necessarily that we have some faith and therefore we're attracted to something. But actually, because we're attracted to something, therefore we develop a certain type of faith. Of course, it works the other way around too. Because we become attracted to something, we will develop a certain type of faith. And by developing a certain type of faith, we become attracted to something. Therefore, in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will say, Shara mayo yam purusho yo yat stratas eva saha sadvan urupa sarvasha sharad bhavati bharata shara mayo yam purusho yo yat stratas eva saha. That according to the modes of material nature acquired by the embodied soul, a person develops a certain type of faith. And according to the faith he acquires, he develops a certain type of attraction. So this particular verse means that if we're not following the rules and regulations of the scripture, then we'll have to act according to the modes of nature. And that will be determined by the particular body that we have. The particular modes of nature we've acquired will attract us to something. And when we act accordingly, then we'll develop another set of the modes of nature, by our activities, the modes of material nature will change, and we'll be attracted to something else. Is that clear? In other words, whatever body we have is actually a combination of the three modes, including the subtle mind. So it's not that we actually have so much free will or free choice. Whatever body we have, then we're attracted to something. The example is just like if one is a hog or a pig, he automatically becomes attracted to eat stool. It's not that he tries it out and sees if he likes that, and then tries that halva and sees if he likes that and makes a choice. No, because of the modes of nature he's acquired, he's attracted to a particular set of sense objects. And as he eats, as he goes through the sense objects, naturally his according to the laws of nature, his consciousness will evolve and gradually he'll become attracted to another set of sense objects. Of course, human beings, they have a choice. They can act in the modes of ignorance or in the modes of passion or in the mode of goodness. So if one is acting whimsically, following the modes of material nature that he's acquired, without following the scriptures, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then either if he's attracted to the mode of ignorance, then further by acting in the mode of ignorance, what will happen? He'll get further into the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance produces more mode of ignorance. What is that verse? Sattvam sanjayate jnanam rajaso lova evacha pramado moha tamaso bhavato jnanam evacha. From the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. And from the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, foolish madness, pramado, and ignorance develop. And because knowledge develops, then karmana sukritas yahu satikam nirmalam phalam. Because one acts in knowledge, he becomes purified. By doing proper activities, one becomes purified of the modes of ignorance and passion. Karmana sukritas yahu, satvikam nimralam palam, rajasas tupalam dukam. And because one acts out of greed, he becomes distressed. And if one acts in the mode of ignorance, out of madness, illusion, or foolishness, the result is that one becomes more foolish. So according to our attraction to a certain type of activity, when we act in that way, we get the result. And that gives us a certain type of faith. And according to that faith, we'll act in a different way, or in the same way for some time. Then gradually, as we develop a different mode, we develop a different faith, and then we act in a different way. Therefore, Shraddha, everyone seems to have a particular faith under the modes of nature, but real faith is Krishna consciousness. Real faith means to understand things properly in the mode of goodness, which is Krishna consciousness.